these sort of things with BIF when you think about the history of BIF, which is primarily founded with the idea of promoting objective evaluation and to maybe drive the industry away from some more subjective things, perhaps in its infancy. And BIF has been very successful in promoting objective evaluation, but there are still some traits that perhaps remain that are justified to selection pressure. And so what I want to talk a little bit about today is not necessarily the specific traits, because I think that those vary widely across environments. That for example, the priority that you might set on a particular trait may depend a little bit on your breed and where that breed lies sort of in the population. Some of the conformational traits perhaps are a real strength in one breed and a real weakness in another. You know, feet and leg soundness is a priority, but probably maybe a bigger priority in a more of an extensive range condition, that sort of thing. And so it'd probably be a little facetious for me to stand up and say that you ought to prioritize this trait or another. What I really want to talk about, though, is kind of a strategy for how you might approach that and how to make that selection most successful for you. So maybe to start off with, to think a little bit about some traits, and we all probably have traits on our list that we include in our selection that may not be currently evaluated in the National Cattle Evaluation System. And then there's a variety of reasons why those traits wouldn't be ones that you can just look up an EPD on the internet. They may be a trait that is somewhat subjectively measured. And, of course, there's always a chance for a breed association to implement some sort of scoring system, and those have been very successful. Heather Bradford, my grad student, reported earlier in one of the other committee meetings about using udder scores in the Hereford breed, and she showed a couple of things that shows a reasonable heritability for that. That trait turns out to be very much moderately heritable. Both the Hereford has also been shown in Gelfie to be so. Heather's also shown that through genetic trend that the breed's made about a one standard deviation improvement in 20 years in that particular trait. So there is obviously some improvement that can be made in traits like that, even if they are somewhat subjective. But if there's enough interest there, certainly tying some sort of a scoring system to it, if there's really anything that can be measured, an EPD can certainly be produced. There are some traits maybe that are objectively measured but not collected by your particular breed association. That each breed has their own suite of traits. Obviously, we've all got the major ones, but some breeds evaluate docility, some do not. Some breeds evaluate some measure of feed intake or feed efficiency, and many do not. And so as you go down this list, there may be traits that you would like to include in your selection scheme, either as a seed stock producer to serve the commercial clients that you have, or as a commercial producer as you make your own selection, either as buying your walking herd bulls or maybe even using AI in that sort of situation. There may be some niche traits that are very unique to you. Colorado State's done some neat work with brisket disease, with high altitude pulmonary artery pressure and some of those sorts of things. Not really an issue in Kansas or here in Oklahoma probably very much, Jeff. But as you get to higher altitudes, obviously it becomes a very much a life and death situation, and certainly a genetic component to those. But there may not be the opportunity, maybe not worthwhile, perhaps, to the entire industry to devote a lot of research effort, but yet maybe something that may be very important to you in your particular locale. There are also some traits that I think, quite honestly, we use as indicators that may be somewhat a little bit questionable, perhaps. And so I want to caution you a little bit on some of these things as using them heavily in a selection scheme as an indicator, particularly if the actual trait is measured, and we can use that through an EPD selection about how that's going to be more useful. And some of these things may or may not be mapping very well to profit. And that's almost in every case, I think, as we build these national evaluation systems, we very much try to find traits either that are directly economically relevant or ones that are closely associated with, and so that we can use them for selection to improve those sort of things. So, first off, I want to give one sort of caveat and warning, is that as I talk about some of these things, keep in mind as you're buying natural service sires, there is an element of functional suitability, an element of soundness that, regardless of what EPDs they might possess for any trait, that I think this is kind of goes without saying, but it probably needs to be said just to go on, that though the breeding soundness is an obvious necessity. You can buy a bull that with an amazing scrotal circumference EPD, but if he doesn't pass the breeding soundness exam, he's not going to transmit that, he's not going to do you any good. So it's one element to sort of think about, you know, acceptable phenotype and those sort of things for a breeding bull and him getting his job done. But what I want to focus on, I think what Jane wants me to address, I hope anyway, is to think about trying to change your population, trying to change the daughters of the sires that you use for some of these traits that are not evaluated. So getting beyond the idea that, yes, they've made the screen for functional soundness and those sort of things. Now, I think about this. I teach animal breeding class at K-State, and it's a really fun class to teach. One of the things I like about it is that we're still fortunate enough at K-State that about half our students have a primary species interest that's beef cattle or a few with dairy cattle or swine or horses or that sort of thing. But what you teach a student about animal breeding if you have a beef cattle interest is a little different than some of those that have other species interests. You know, we do have students that approach, and their goal is to breed better dogs.
Okay.
And thinking about that, that's a little different kind of a thing to take on. They don't have the tools we have. You know, dairy folks have amazing tools. Swine breeders have great tools just like we do. But there are some species that have to kind of go back to the way we used to do things. But the way that I try to approach and teach that sort of thing then is to work through kind of how EBDs work and then think about what you have to do if you're basically doing it more subjectively and perhaps on your own. So regardless of whether your trait that you care about is weaning weight, or maybe it's something, maybe it's an udder trait, and your breed doesn't have an udder score EBD, that when you select a sire, that you are estimating their breeding value, their progeny difference. You know, even if you're picking a bull out of the catalog based on his picture, Don, even if you're picking him on his picture, you're not picking the picture because you like him. You like the idea that the progeny are going to look like him. It'd be nice if you run the picture in your catalog and those sort of things, but really what it's about is achieving that, transmitting it to the next generation. What is the difference I'll see in the progeny of that bull if I use him as opposed to bull B? So to do the best job of that, it's really about making the same sort of considerations that the EPD system already does. Okay? So the first step is, if we're thinking about a trait like this, and there's a number of examples that you might think about, maybe udder traits, maybe dispositions, some of those sort of things. But when we select with EPDs, that's based on a data recording system the breed associations manage. It's based on accurate, objective measurements of the phenotype. Okay? So if you're interested in udder traits, you need to make sure that you have some information, whether it is numeric scores or whether it's your own visual assessment by walking through cow herds, and a lot of us still like to do that. And, you know, we want to see the daughters of bull X. Okay? But as we're doing that and we're seeing those daughters and we're making evaluations, we need to keep in mind, being, you know, as accurate as we can. You know, sometimes we get to see the best ones. Sometimes we get to see all of them. It's better if we can see all of them. Okay? But we don't always see all of them. Just like for the EPD system to work well, all the traits need to be turned in. Okay? So it's the same sort of approach we want to think about in terms of making a selection and seeing the animals and completely and accurately and that sort of thing. If there is a measurement error, just like if there's an error in a scale, then that lowers the accuracy of the selection. Okay? The other thing we want to think about is comparing animals to within their contemporary group. We understand that for traits like weaning weight or mature size, there are environmental effects that have to be accounted for. And in our national cattle evaluation system, we use contemporary grouping to adjust for that. And so rather than the actual weight really being what drives the EPD, it's that animal's weight relative to their group average. And I think in terms of looking at some of these things that are not in national evaluation systems, that you need to sort of take the same approach. That there are environmental differences, if we're talking about udder traits and maybe the forage quality and the season of calving and those sort of things. Particularly, this is important if you're going across herds. That before we had a national evaluation system, we were working with ratios. That one of the big problems with ratios is it didn't very well account for genetic differences across groups. It would identify superior animals within groups, but it was really hard to compare from ranch to ranch. So we still have to keep this in mind if it's some of these sort of traits that were important to us to make sure that we're doing a good job of that. EPDs account for the heritability of the trait. Our expectation in terms of genetic change or genetic improvement for a trait is partially the function of heritability. And again, you guys have this definition, but I'll just kind of work it back for you. A couple of you, it may have been a year or two since you took animal breeding. But heritability reflects the degree, really, to which a trait is genetically controlled, as opposed to environmentally influenced. Every trait that we care about pretty much has both a genetic component and an environmental component. But for a highly heritable trait, the genetic component has greater significance, the environmental component is less, and vice versa. When a trait is more heritable, that means that the progeny will more likely resemble their parents. Relatives resemble each other more closely, like begats like. And as the trait is lower in heritability, then that's not as much the case, that the environmental influences are a bigger determinant of the phenotype we might see in the progeny. Genetic progress is slower. So understanding heritability in the range and understanding what is heritable and what isn't can tell us a little bit about how much progress we're likely to take. In Heather's study with the Hereford udder traits, you know, we said that it's moderately heritable, about 25%, bordering on 30 in one of the traits. So that tells us that with a few generations of selection with some good information, we ought to be able to make the cattle, you know, noticeably better. But some traits that are lower in heritability, particularly things like female reproductive rate, largely influenced by environmental influences, there is a genetic component to it, somewhat age of puberty and some of those other things, but a large component of that is really the environment. That if we were to set out and say, you know, I'm going to make my life's work to breed more fertile cattle and I'm going to faithfully cull every cow that's open, cull every heifer that doesn't get bred, there's probably very good economic reasons to do that, but we shouldn't expect a large genetic improvement even over several generations, because the genetic variation for that trait is relatively small compared to some other traits. It would be much easier to select for mature size, because that's a much more heritable trait. Traits like conformation traits, we don't have a lot of data in beef cattle because a lot of those have not been widely characterized or evaluated. We've looked a little bit at some of the dairy data sets or the classification scores, and this is a kind of a unique data set that's actually from ABS Global. ABS has had for a long time their GTS, or genetic type summary program. 20 years ago, I was one of their interns and traveled north and south Dakota walking through pastures with a clipboard scoring cows for things like udder attachment, body capacity, femininity, and et cetera. And they've collected that data in a number of their breeds, and they use that to the information you see in their sire catalog on these traits is not just some phone calls, but it's actually based on quite a bit of data that they've collected over the years on progeny of their most important sires. Dave Christian, when he was at Cornell, analyzed this data, calculated heritability. This is all Simmental data from the ABS data set, but it's very similar, I think, to what you would see in dairy cattle or any other assessment, that some traits do have quite a bit of a heritable component to them. No surprise that height, quite heritable. That, again, we know we breed big to big, we tend to get big, and vice versa. Things like muscling also, and that's a visual assessment of muscling. It's not ribeye area, but it's a visual assessment, viewing the animal from the rear and down the top and that sort of thing. Teeth size, reasonably heritable, udder depth, quite heritable. Some things are not as heritable. Some of the feet and leg traits, and maybe ones that some of our bull customers are quite concerned about because they see them as a potential issue in terms of cow retention, seem to be less heritable. Things like hock angle and pastern angle, those sort of things, seem to be less heritable, more influenced by environment, perhaps the pasture conditions, feed resources, some of those sort of things, rate of development, all those sort of things perhaps have a little more impact. And so those would be traits that would be harder to change, for better or for worse, through a selection. The other thing that EPDs will do is that they combine lots of sources of information. And that's one of the reasons it makes it a very powerful tool, is because it takes the animal's own measurement, its own phenotype, its weight, or whatever is submitted to the society or association. It also has a tremendous amount of pedigree information. And so that gives us extra information on an animal from its ancestors, its collateral relatives, siblings, and its progeny when that is available. And so all that data is combined in an objective manner and weighted appropriately. That is a challenge if you are working with a trait that doesn't have this sort of thing. But particularly for a trait that is lowly heritable, that extra information is particularly important to move beyond just evaluating the animal itself, but to a true progeny test. And so again, if we're thinking about other traits, it's probably not enough to see a sire's mother, as much as that may be the first step for us. Then we probably, if we can, go on to see a group of daughters. That's a much more meaningful sort of information, because if we can see a large group of daughters compared to daughters of other sires that are widely used, that sort of thing, that can give us a much better snapshot of what that bull could potentially do if we're looking at AI sires. Now again, that's an AI sire thing. For buying a natural service sire, we probably don't have that luxury. EPDs account for the level of genetic competition. In other words, you know, what kind of cattle were these animals you're interested in compared against? Now, I joke with my animal breeding class that, you know, that we could all go out on Claflin Street in front of Weber Hall and we could run a 100-yard dash. And somebody's going to win that race. It sure won't be me. But somebody's going to win that, but that doesn't mean you're ready to be on the K-State track team. Okay, that's a different level of competition. It's the same way that there are some very elite herds in this country for a variety of traits that still have animals that ratio below average, right? That doesn't mean they're not good cattle. That just means they were up against some really good competition. This is awfully hard to kind of get a piece of for some of these kind of traits. EPDs do this really well. But it's a little harder for us to think about, okay, so, you know, you've got an idea of kind of what your ideal udder looks like. And you see a group of females that match that. They seem very functional. But, you know, what is the environmental piece of that? What are, you know, so here's the, we've got a group of daughters of Bull C. Well, what was Bull C bred to make those daughters? You know, that's a piece that you've got to figure out as well, the idea of non-random mating. You know, it's not uncommon for seed stock producers to say, you know, I'm going to breed all my daughters of this bull to that bull. And so when you see a really nice group of daughters out of the second bull, you know, is it because he's really good or because he got bred to some females that themselves have really good genetics for udder quality? Again, that's something that the EPD system accounts for, but something that you sort of have to take on your own. Can introduce some noise into a more sort of a visual selection approach. The latest thing, of course, and the thing that we're really excited about in animal breeding is the opportunity to incorporate genomic information. And again, that's not at this point, although there's no reason why that some of these traits, if they are objectively measured or scored, that we couldn't have genomic information for that. But that's really our next step with the Hereford udder data, is that now that we've got a sort of a traditional mixed model evaluation, a blood model for udder traits, a lot of the sires that have relatively high accuracy EPDs in the Hereford udder trait evaluation have already had a 50K profile done, and that's Heather's next project, is that she's going to dig into that and see if we might find SNP information that might add accuracy to the udder score EPDs. And there's no reason why we shouldn't find something like that. So, again, that's something that you're not going to have until the trait that you're interested in progresses a little bit further than maybe this. But it really does help us then, once we have that, sort among half-sibs and full-sibs. Mendelian sampling, that randomness, that when you thaw a straw of semen and there's 10 million sperm cells in there, is the one that actually causes conception, a really good one, a really bad one, or an average one. And when you have flush mates that are quite divergent, you know, that's why that's happening. A genomics approach would certainly give us much more accuracy and help us pick the right one. The other thing that, you know, if we can get to genomics, we can directly evaluate bulls for female traits, for things like heifer pregnancy, for things like udder traits. There's no phenotype for the bulls, but the genomic information is there just like it is in the females. The other thing, maybe this should have been at the start instead of at the end, but the idea of mapping this trait to profit. Okay, this is a concern for you. This is something that you want to prioritize in your seed stock operation or in your commercial operation, is that you have to think about how does this map to profit. That, you know, we have selection indexes using the objectively measured national cattle evaluation traits in a variety of breeds, things like API or dollar B or BMI, that describe the relationship between the trait and profit. And that's sort of, again, that you have to figure that out. How does that map in? You know, if I make this trait change, how will that make either me or my customers more profitable? I played around a little bit with some other data. I had some Hereford data on my computer. These are disposal codes from Hereford's whole herd cow database. And I went through, first off, I took out the ones that were sold in the seed stock herd or sold as commercial breeding animals. These are the animals that were failures in the Hereford database, and trying to think about what are the reasons that cows are being culled. And I think maybe this is useful because it sort of helps you think about, you know, what is the incidence of failure for some of these traits. And in the vast majority, Hereford breeders, for the most part, when they cull a cow, they cull her because she's open. You know? And that accounts for more than half the cows that are eliminated from the herd, from breeding herds, are for open. Low production comes in there. And then some things that are you know, questionable in terms of their genetics, illness, other death. So there were categories where there's, you know, death due to this, and some of these are factored in there, like death due to injury or cold due to injury. I put those together. So other death is death other than some of the things that we put on there. Injury, but really until you get down to temperament, there's not a lot of things that aren't in the evaluation that are truly genetic that we can really leverage in this sort of an approach. And again, Angus Limousine, Solaire, some of the other breeds have a docility EPD to sort of take that on. So even in that case, those are their calving difficulty. We've got that well evaluated in the system. Other traits we're talking about, you know, I think there's a sort of a perception out there that there's a large degree of failure due to skeletal structure, feed, those sort of things. And then obviously that's variable. And it's variable in environment, and it's variable probably by breed, and it's probably some of those sort of things. But in this particular breed, in this very large data set, we just don't see very many people at least writing down that a cow failed because, now maybe some of those injuries, maybe that's a foot injury and they wrote it down as injury and not as foot or some of those sort of things. But, you know, the eyes and some of those sort of things, and a few do get culled because of genetic defect carriers. But I thought that was interesting to kind of put in perspective, you know, what is the incidence? This is in a seed stock operation. Would that be different in a commercial operation? Perhaps. I'm not sure. Another thing that sometimes we think about a little bit in terms of a trait that we widely evaluate is visual muscle. And, you know, at our bull sale, we sell about 80 bulls every March, and we have a lot of people walking through the pens. We have some customers that walk through the pens for hours on end almost. Some of them just find a seat in front and read out of the catalog and make their selections, and you know, everybody's kind of got their own approach to it. A lot of them are looking at them visually. They're looking at them for visual muscle. Probably maybe after structure is the next thing that they're looking at the most. There's actually a study that goes back, was done at Clay Center. It's a 20-year selection study that Bob Cook wrote up in 2004, where they had three selection lines. This, again, just happened to be in Hereford cattle, but they selected a line for weaning weight, a line for yearling weight, and then they had a line that was selected for yearling weight plus visual muscling, where they went through and scored the cattle for muscling and used that as part of selection. And after 20 years in this project, they found that they measured ribeye area in the carcasses. This was well before we had the opportunity to measure ultrasound ribeye area. But they found that visual muscling, while reasonably heritable, was not a great predictor of carcass cutability. That ribeye area was a much better predictor of yield grade. Of course, it's in the yield grade equation, but in terms of overall cutability or red meat yield, the ribeye area was a better indicator, and of course that's a trait we have in our EPD system. Now, maybe a question more than is a discussion point, but something to think about though, but you know, obviously the majority of our cow-calf producers are going to market calves at weaning. Those calves are going to be evaluated visually. There's not going to be a ribeye scan on those. It's going to be an order buyer looking at the cattle and assessing their muscling visual. So, you know, to them, what is the economically relevant trait? It probably is, in terms of what price they fetch in the sale barn, probably more visual muscle. Ribeye area is somewhat related to that. There could be some selection there. But, you know, that may be a case where a selection for a visual characteristic could be profit-oriented. So, kind of in summary, that when we have EPDs available, that's going to be the most powerful selection tool. That that we want to steer producers in that direction in terms of making their selection. I want to caution, and some things we run into in bull buyers and even that I run into in my dad sometimes, is that he tends to look at semen catalogs and he looks at sale catalogs and he tends to make his own mental adjustments. And I know nobody else does that, but the idea that he takes the EPD and then he wants to adjust it for the actual birth weight, or he adjusts the rib eye area for how thick the bull looks, or some of those sort of things, he's making these adjustments and he's thinking he's helping, and he's really not. You know, that those things are already in, for the most part, that certainly the actual weights are already in there. That's in the calculation. And so as we make those adjustments and overemphasize some things and underemphasize others, that we're actually lowering our accuracy and we're lowering our rate of genetic progress. So just kind of a reminder that if we've got a trait that is part of the national evaluation system, we just want to use that. And that assessment that we get out of that is the best number that we can get and the best decision tool. The traits without EPDs can be selected for, and they certainly have been, but compared with a trait that's in the system, it's definitely more difficult and the genetic change is slower. So kind of the good news and bad news is that if there is a trait that's not part of your national evaluation system, that it is more difficult to change it. If you've got a problem, it's going to be a little harder to fix it. Maybe the good news is, though, that if you don't have a problem, it's a little harder to create it. You know, some have argued that one of the problems with the EPD system is it gives you what you ask for. And sometimes people have overzealously selected for a variety of traits and it's worked a little too well. And so maybe with these traits, that's a little harder to do. The other thing I would argue that if there is a trait that is particularly important to you and important to your breed or your customers, like what some breeds have done with docility or have done with other traits or that sort of thing, that if you can convince your board of directors to make this a priority, it certainly can be done. That it's really not that hard. It's from once the data starts getting collected that those sort of things can be presented. And it's not that we're trying to get to 100 EPDs. That there are some traits that I think in Hirschberg's case, we will provide an utter EPD because we have breeders that want to make selection. This cow needs to be bred to a bull that's good for udders. But for some of these other traits, we just need to build them into the index. And really, it doesn't change the way the producer works with the index. It just makes the index better because they just account for more of the variation problem. So with that, Jane, I'll stop and take any questions or